To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourselves and the relationship with others, finding our stability and our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships. Yeah, let's do it. It's good to be back. I've just come back from a 3-week holiday, well needed, well rested, and ready to jump in. Bit of a cliffhanger before I left with a pretty special podcast that I've been very excited to have you on. But first, I just want to share what's going on and what's coming up with Fine Lesion Therapy and what we're kind of doing. I guess so. This kind of shouts to, is it your time to be able to enjoy your life and start to love who you are? Do you find it hard to get on top of all the tasks running around in your mind? Do you wish there was a better way to enhance and improve the way you are living? I'm just about to launch the non-negotiable self-care program where we're going to focus on reducing stress, enhancing resilience, improving relationships, increasing productivity, and personal growth. At the moment, we are waiting to launch, and it is pretty much a community to connect with like-minded individuals, sharing our experiences and learning and witnessing from each other and within ourselves. We're going to start to prioritize our well-being and empower ourselves to live happier, healthier lives. I guess stress is all around us, you know, big or small, hidden, seen. It can all have an impact. It can impact our sleep, our emotions, our mood, our focus, our learning, and overall performance. So what I want to do is start to unlock our full potential and come back to our foundation, our structure, and our routine, and ensure that the scaffolding is there so you can stand up and grow within yourself. So non-negotiable self-care is essentially going to start to put that in place for you and be that foundation for you, and already helping thousands of people and all my clients get a little taste of this. And if you're listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That's why I'm giving away my free non-negotiable self-care plan to help you stop negotiating you so that you can continue to get better in yourself and your relationships. Don't let life get on top of you. I want to empower you to get on top of your life. So take the first step with me. You can get the links in our bio on Instagram or in the show notes on this podcast today. I really want to take you through this journey and start to be this accountable piece for yourself, and knowing that there'll be a community there to support you as well. So we got a Facebook page and we're about to launch. So come on in. It's free. Join now. Click now. Let's do it. Okay. I haven't done that on this podcast before. Thanks for staying tuned. So without further ado, let's introduce just the coolest guest that I've ever had on. Definitely my big old man crush. I've wanted and manifested and longed for this person to come on. So let me introduce Mark Groves, founder of Create the Love. Mark bridges between the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. All of the things. Mark is not here to fuck around on this planet during this lifetime. He doesn't want to kind of do things. Mark is here to rock the boat and to share his truth, his purpose, to empower individuals to step into their power, transform the way they relate to themselves and others, and create authentic change for a life plus love that they'll look back on with a resounding fuck yes. If you don't know who Mark Groves is, come on out of the cave that you've been sleeping in. I don't think this man needs an introduction, but there you have it. There's the introduction. Let's jump in. Thanks for staying tuned. Thanks for coming back. Reason With Me podcast. Let's go. All right. Welcome back to the podcast. I am honored and privileged to sit here with Mark Groves. Welcome, man.
Oh, man. I'm so excited to be on your podcast. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, it's so good. I'm super, super keen. So you are calling from Canada? You're in Canada at the moment?
I am in Idaho, actually, okay. In the United States.
Right. You're originally Canadian, and you've kind of traveled between here, there, and everywhere, except for Australia. You need to come down here.
Yeah, I've been to Australia twice now and loved both visits. It was incredible. I can't wait to come back there. Yeah, I kind of like spend my time between Canada and the US and
yeah,
hopefully doing some European and Australian touring next year.
Woo! Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how it works with, you know how comedians have like their warm-up, their warm-up comedian? I'd do that for you.
The opener. Yeah, I'll take it.
The opener. Yeah, I'd love that. If I get the people going, I could be good. So.
Yeah, I agree. And I got to have a local welcome me to the culture. That sounds perfect.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'll show you around. I know some things. Should be cool. Yeah, let me know. That'd be so good. So let's jump straight in. For those who don't know you, I assume most people would, but who the hell are you and what do you do?
You know, Australia is actually a place that I have one of my highest followings from in terms of countries, which is pretty sweet.
Is that right?
A Canadian, I've felt very relatable to Australians. We like have a kindred spirit, you know, the Australians come to our ski hills and work there and we all go and travel your East Coast. So. For me, my name is Mark Groves. I'm obsessed with understanding how people interact, connect, and how not just interpersonal romantic relationships work, although that's sort of the area that I find is the magnification of most of our dysfunction. I'm really interested in how we move together as a culture too. So kind of like from the micro to the meta.
Yeah, man. And I think what I love and I've always loved is the connection specialist, right? I love that.
Yeah, you know, I was obsessed with how people interact when I was in sales. And then when I went through a relational breakdown, I was like, why am I so good at all these other forms of communication, but not with my partners, not with people who really matter to me? It wasn't a skill set thing. There was something else going on. So yeah, I then dove into the research on that and started teaching on it and just felt like human connection as a specialty just felt like exactly what I did. No one else ever called themselves that. Now I see it every once in a while, but no one else was calling themselves that. And I'm like, well, this is exactly what I do. I can go into a workplace or I can go into a home and really understand the patterns of behavior.
Yeah. And I think, you know, those that whoever you've seen it around of definitely, you know, stealing the little trademark markers. I think it's such a nice I remember listening to someone.
They could take it, man. They could take it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll put it on mine. Because I love it. It's just such a nice
do it, man. I don't own it.
Yeah, okay. Sweet. There you go. Heard it here first, guys. The permission.
It's done.
Well, yeah, man. So I guess that sort of thing, like you said about the relationships, right? Like you're a good communicator and everything kind of came naturally, but then you step into the, you know, the hoozy doozies with the relationship stuff and it becomes like everything falls apart. So I think one thing that I loved that you said the other day, and I'd love to explore it more, is I guess would imagining kind of how it would start to come up to know that you're not that great at communicating or there's things going on for you. But when you get reactive, we get curious about that and then what that's about. And I'd love to kind of pull that apart a little bit because I think that's probably a nice way to kind of dive in is what maybe for you, how that happened. And when you were like, oh, okay, why am I not as good at relationship communication or connection as I am for every other part of me that can talk?
Yeah, you know, I would have thought that I was good at communicating because there was a real absence of conflict in my life. There wasn't much of it. You know, if it was in the workplace or in a romantic relationship, I could generally handle it. But I was really good at flipping shit around too on my partner. So, you know, often joke, my other buddy and I, one of my best friends, we were both in sales. We both worked at the same companies. Our girlfriends and at the time, they would say to each other, like, why when we have a complaint, we end up feeling like it's our fault, you know, at the end. And well, that would now be titled gaslighting. But at the time, it didn't have a title yet. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know it was such a defensive technique that I had to, because I had such a delicate sense of self-worth. So for me, the way that it really started to show up was that, one, I asked myself when I was 27 and I had been engaged, I didn't want to get engaged. I got engaged. She was and is an incredible woman, but I didn't want to be engaged. And yet I got engaged. That didn't make sense to me in hindsight. I was like, why did I do something I didn't want to do? There must be something else going on. And that's where I started to really understand unconscious narratives and beliefs that we hold about what relationships are supposed to be like, how communication is supposed to be. And I really saw that through that adventure of inquiry into self, which, you know, you've obviously been on the same adventure, you start to discover the limitations of your communication. And so I started to see that I was prone to getting defensive. I would get reactive and shut down. And I realized that I didn't really advocate for my own needs. I was afraid to take up space. I was afraid of conflict. I oriented around other people's needs. I oriented around wanting to keep them happy. If my partner was upset and it wasn't about me, that would dysregulate me. You know, so it really started to be this recognition that I wanted to be really good at love and I wanted to be really good at relationships. And that wasn't something I was taught in school.
No.
And it was something that I desperately wanted and needed. And I recognized that everyone around me, at least in my experience, wanted the same thing, but didn't know how to get it. And we were calling dysfunctional behavior normal. We were calling the inability to build long-term, really sacred bonds. We were just calling that normal, you know? And I was like, but there are people who can. So what's special about them? What does the research say? And then when I looked at, you know, there's really sort of the trailblazers of that world are like the Gottmans and Harville Hendrix, Alan Hunt, Stan Takin. But, you know, there wasn't really anyone who had looked, you know, these are all therapists. This was not common language. This was not like, the mainstreaming of Gottman's work was really Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, where he talks about how they can listen to 3 minutes of a conversation from a couple and predict with 80% accuracy if they'll divorce. So yeah, communication to me was something that I wanted to excel at in order to be good at sales, but then also I wanted to excel at so I could get girls, which then became I wanted to excel at so I could create and develop meaningful connections.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the transformation, right? Is, you know, you're kind of setting goals and then achieving them and then going, oh, this still doesn't feel quite right. Why aren't I feeling whole yet or whatever? And you're kind of looking externally or whatever.
Yeah.
And then finally, it's come back to that meaningful connection, right? Which I guess is that connection to self-worth, which I guess this podcast is kind of all about and you speak a lot about. And I love that. So yeah, I guess, was that the final kind of piece of the puzzle for you? That now I can at least know where my self-worth is impacted and how I can create more meaning within me and how I communicate with myself. And
yeah, you know, I think it's just such a constant evolution. You know, I think of the restoration of wholeness or the restoration of self. Like you can't love yourself and seemingly make decisions that are not loving to oneself. You know, that's a strange paradox to be able to hold, because like, and that's not to be perfect. You know, the saying in AA is it's about progress, not perfection. But the part there is that so many of us are enacting or living behaviors that we know are not productive, that we know are not healthy, that we know are toxic either to ourselves or others. And I'd say if they're toxic to others, they're toxic to ourselves. So we're doing that knowingly, and we're not stepping into the integrity of changing that behavior and cleaning up our behavior. So to me, self-worth is something that is not a destination, but a way of being. It's a way of living. You know, I can make a mistake, but as long as I'm learning from them, then myself is restored, if that makes sense. Like so many of us in relationship, we believe that our relationship completes us, or we don't see that the challenges we have in relationship, you know, that that idea when you get triggered, get curious, or when you get reactive, get curious. It's because really, I think it's Harville Hendricks who talks about how 90% of the time, the thing you're fighting about today is not actually even about today. You know,
yeah,
it's,
no,
it's some sort of historic moment, not even maybe from this relationship that is showing up. And so to me, these reactive moments are these opportunities to reflect on and heal things from our past that we're bringing forward. Because really, if you and I are having a challenge, you know, we have a conflict, we don't have any history together that would dictate how that's going to go today.
Yeah.
But there really should be no reason I raise my voice. There should be no reason I get defensive. And so really, we start to bring in these childlike adolescent behaviors. And you think about it, we actually regress back to the age at which we learn these behaviors, right? And I know, sorry, there's a bit of a delay, so I don't mean to cut you off or anything.
That's all good. We're good. I mean, I'm just agreeing with you.
But yeah, that's the end of my rant.
All right. Yeah. Fuck yeah. I love it. I think that what you're saying is like, there's like we repeat what we don't repair sort of thing. And if we don't kind of do what we need to do, it's going to show up, and then we regress, and the old, we end up, it's like wounded child versus wounded child in these teenage kind of reactions to each other that, yeah, I mean, it gets really messy. And yeah, I mean, you're right. It's like what I would bring to the table if we were in conflict would be all my old shit. You know, if it's big, it's old, or if it's hysterical, it's historical sort of stuff. Like that would just be me getting uncomfortable in conflict and being able to not move through it. But I guess that's that thing. It's like you want to change the model of the way that you relate or the way that you love. Then you've got to kind of step into this idea that's like, I'm going to grow with you if I allow myself to be able to grow with you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so beautiful, because that's really the model of healthy relating. It's like, are we going to use the information of the way that we don't vibe? Are we going to use that as a way to grow, to change? Like, are we going to use the conflict that we have, which, you know, most of us fight about the same shit. It's because it's never been resolved. And if we can actually figure out how to hear each other, how to validate each other, how to change, then we can actually create relationships that are about, you know, giving. I think of my partner as being like one of the greatest avenues to my evolution. She can see me in ways I don't often see myself, or I'm not ready to accept myself, or there's a behavior that I have that is just, you know, it's in my shadow. I don't see it, but she's able to reflect back to me, right? Which I don't always love what she reflects back. Most of the time, I don't love what she reflects back to me, but it's liberating in so many ways.
And, you know, I guess if you don't allow that feedback, or you don't accept what, you know, you're willing to kind of grow through, then you're just going to come stagnant, and then that's where the conflict is going to keep coming back to you. But I think you talked about it really nicely the other day, where it's like, we will shrink our own desires and our wants and needs in order to keep kind of people close. And I think that kind of shame around, yeah, this is how I want to be and I want to grow with you, but if I don't keep doing this action, which is maybe sacrificing myself, then I'm not worthy, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable. So I need to keep doing some of that stuff. And that's this like toxic thing that we're convinced on.
Well, yeah. And you know, the irony of that is we get to be the martyr and the victim. Cause I get to often what you'll see is people blame their partner, or they blame their parents for the inability to accept their bigness. But really, when you haven't expressed your bigness, when you haven't expressed your voice, it means you haven't accepted it. And you've made the idea, and it's a valid idea, that if I am that, I will lose people. That is very true. You know, that can be very true. So I don't want to minimize the impact of that. But I always ask people, like, is that the life you ultimately want to live? Like, when you look at the things that people regret when they're on their deathbed, Bronnie Ware wrote a book called The Five Regrets of the Dying. And in that book, she talks about, you know, what are the things that people regret most when they're on their deathbed? And it's not things like, I should have worked harder. You know, it's like, I wish I would have loved more. I wish I would have honored myself more. I wish I would have said, I'm sorry. You know, and this, you think about the saying, I know there's an Australian saying of tall poppy syndrome. Mm-hmm. And you think about what that saying really indicates is like, this person is getting too big for the group. Like, let's mm-hmm. cut them out. Let's cut them down. But, you know, we all aspire to be that, you know, but when a normal behavior, like something is normalized as a cultural norm, then anyone who behaves outside of that norm is often targeted by the group. I mean, you see that with many subjects in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. So it is actually an act of revolution to allow yourself to dream big, to be big, to express yourself. Think most relationships actually, and human systems, especially because we learn this in childhood. And so we have to, in adult relationships, step out of the role, which is the healing of getting out of the system and creating our own system. But it's like, we learn to orient around dysfunction. We learn to orient around the narcissist, the alcoholic, the addict. You know, we learn that. And then as adults, we wonder why we are not liberated. We wonder why we're not speaking. We wonder why we don't pursue our dreams. And the only way to change a system is you change. You change and you force the whole system to orient differently. And when we're talking in the context of romantic relationships, that's where most people are trapped. Is they're like, if I say this thing, or I become this, or I say I want to change, or I want to grow, or I want to change how we're doing this, or I want to pursue this dream, this job, I want to change how we communicate, I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. But what's the alternative? The relationship is then held together by your fear, which means it is always predicated on you silencing yourself. And that means you're going to be living as a shrunk version of you, which I look now and I go, what's the point? You know, as a kid, I used to be conflict avoidant, and in my 20s, same. But look where it got me. And it ended up hurting other people. So like, when are we going to show up? When are we going to change? And, you know, that could be paralyzing, but the answer has to be now. It has to be now. It has to be now.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. And how the hell do you do that though? Right. Like, I mean, I guess to kind of even answer that, I guess we've got to understand shame and then where that comes from and how to kind of move through that. But yeah, like what's the path? Like that's, fear is so overpowering and obviously trying to protect us and keep us safe. It's just so old and it's a role, like you said. So how do you jump out of that? Right.
Well, I think you said something really important there, which is you have to honor the biological nature of your system. You know, if I go and take someone who grew up in fear, was shamed, and I say, just leap off the cliff and become everything you've always wanted, you know, I'm not taking into account that they likely don't have the nervous system capacity for that level of uncertainty. So I think there's the nervous system lens. I also, you know, there's another part of me though, that is like, there is something about going to the island and burning the boat. You know, there's something about putting yourself in the circumstance where you have to rise. And for some people, that's not going to be a tolerable step. You know, that's going to be too dysregulating. But I'd also say that for some of us, it's the excuse, you know? It's like, there will never be the perfect time. There will never be the perfect circumstances. I think the most important, like you come back to, or you mentioned shame. Yeah, I mean, it keeps us stuck, right? It keeps us frozen. It keeps us from creating. It's this constant thought of like, something is wrong with me. Like I'm flawed.
I'm defective.
But if we don't actually step into what we desire, believe, feel, think, then we are actually reinforcing that we're flawed. So the way through that is to begin to take small steps. You know, they talk about, I know it's in Jordan Peterson's book, The 12 Rules for Life, but that's not actually where I heard it first, but it's about making your bed. You know, that, there's a saying that,
very good, right,
you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's a saying that the opposite of trauma is choice. And so the reason that making a declaration like I'm going to make my bed every morning, it seems so seemingly small, but it's actually such an act of self-trust to say you're going to do something and do it.
Yeah.
And so most of us do not keep our word with ourselves. And so when we can start to do that, we build up a like a fuel tank, a resilience. And all of a sudden, we're now creating this new version of us that's reliable. You know, that realizes that I show up for me because I'm not flawed. This is the reaffirming of my wholeness. And that's, to me, that's kind of like the most important aspect of it, is actually starting to restore integrity with oneself, with our own word. And then from there, like, look, most dreams are going to sound crazy to people who don't pursue their dreams. Like, that's the thing. If you hang around with people who have never jumped, who have never leapt, who have never quit something, who have never started something, who have never claimed their own truth, their own voice, what their soul is calling them towards, stood up for themselves, you're going to be surrounded by people who are not living the thing you desire. So surrounding yourself with really expanded people who are already living the values that you desire, that's where groups come in, you know, like hiking groups, music groups, sewing groups, I don't know, any kind of group where you can find like-minded people. Yeah. That's why AA is so powerful.
I mean, that's the power of connection, right? I mean, that just brings everyone together and goes, I got to be accountable with me, and that's me. You know, I guess showing up is a choice that that person makes, which is them kind of committing and having accountability and self-trust, like you said, and that honoring of them. But then they get held in that because there's like 50 other people that have done that for themselves as well. And then you just sit in that.
Right, right.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah, you surround yourself with people who have completed the mission, you know, the one that you're embarking on. And so like, who better to be around? Because energetically you're feeling aligned. You can feel that you're starting to learn their micro behaviors. And so you start to model them. I mean, there's so much. You start to regulate your nervous system with them for possibility and potential instead of fear. So, you know, there's all these things that are happening on another level, on a cellular level, that you might not even know are happening. You know, some people might say on an energetic level in a different dimension. It doesn't really matter how it's happening. It's fucking happening. And you can change your life because you surround yourself with believers, you know?
Yeah, when I mean that's kind of what I'm just like constantly coming back to. Like, obviously, I'm like a trauma specialist, right? And I'm constantly working with people's deep-seated shit and wounds and unconscious and all the old. But at the end of the day, it's about that. What are you doing every day throughout the week for you consistently? That is you setting boundaries with yourself when you go and do something like make your bed or something non-negotiable that is like, you know, I have to go to do this thing, which is like yoga or, you know, get to sleep on time and get my 8 hours of sleep. Like, this is why I have to do this. And when I do this, it's me setting boundaries with myself and it's me proving that I am worthy and good enough just to be here doing this for just me, no one else. You know, I think that's what it all comes back down to. And you're kind of saying the same thing, which is great. That's the way.
Yeah, you know, that consistent showing up for yourself instead of pursuing other people to show up for you, you know, instead of seeking unavailable people who keep reaffirming your lack of worthiness, or like, when is enough enough? And, you know, I've seen people make radical transformations in their life when they just decided that they were done with whatever the talk. I mean, I've done that. It's like, I just can't do this anymore. I've hit the end and I know that the further bottom is not good. It's way more devastation. It's way more pain. And for some of us, we need to get there. But, you know, I think we all need to ask ourselves, because we almost all of us will have a behavior that's kind of creeping in that we're like, ooh, how do I, this is actually starting to dig at me. You know, and that's the part of being a human. It's not, again, it's not about like moralizing or seeking moral perfection. Yeah. It's about paying attention to the things that we're doing that are coping, which I think at the core of every addiction, at the core of almost every addiction, is the abandonment of self, is that we have a call, we have a voice, we have something we need to step towards, and the pain of not listening and not an untapped potential requires us to anesthetize ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's that thing that Gabor Mate says around, like, you know, role versus, or attachment versus authenticity. it's we're always going to choose attachment mm-hmm. because for whatever reason that sits higher on the, you know, hierarchy of need in terms of like whether or not we're going to survive when we're young. And then we drop our authenticity to be able to have that attachment. So this evolution, if that's the way it keeps going, we stay in that role, we abandon our true self, then yeah, that eventually the true self like banging on the door saying, let me out, I just want to be me. And then
right,
you're like, well, if you're not going to let me out, how about we have some meth, you know? Like we're going to start, you know, sorting this pain out by getting rid of it as best as we can. And that's, yeah, addiction, whatever it might be, drugs, sex, alcohol, you know, right? I didn't think it doesn't matter.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's so normalized in our culture too.
Yeah.
It's just normal to have, you know, an unhealthy relationship with alcohol and call it wine night, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who can have a healthy relationship to alcohol, but. You know, I'm just saying like it's our culture has normalized a dysfunctional relationships with substances.
Yeah. And our phones and, you know, and the way that we kind of connect in certain ways, which has its amazing benefit. Like we wouldn't be able to do this if we weren't scrolling on
right,
you know, to look at each other. But I guess it's that, you know, that there's a dark side to all of it, everything in moderation, right? And if most people, because we're conditioned that way, we don't have moderation built in. We didn't learn that at school. We didn't learn that if we had dysfunctional like models of relationships. So we're all screwed unless we come back to that surrender and acceptance, which like you're saying is the cliff that we've got to figure out if we're ready to take the leap on it in a good way.
Yeah. I think it's important that we all just recognize like there is no possible transformation that occurs without telling the truth about who we are. Like it just can't, you can't change anything if you're not willing to tell the truth about where you're at. It's just impossible because you're not starting with reality. So, you know, this is it's a powerful shift to all of a sudden say, I'm going to tell the truth from now on. I know in Martha Beck's book, The Way of Integrity, she makes a commitment for a week that she's just going to not lie at all. She said it was pretty hard because you like kind of push a lot of relationships away. But she was talking about how she maybe wouldn't do it to that level of extreme. But I was like, that's so true. Like, think about how many things we lie about for other people's feelings. It's like so common. Right.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you the truth about how you feel and how I feel. Or, you know, like that's going to crush the little sensitivity sometimes. That would be tough. Hooyah.
Oh, that would be so tough because you imagine the setup. It's like, do I look fat in these jeans? And you're like, yes.
I don't know.
Like, how that one. So there are, I think, I think there are some productive, but you know, I don't know. That's a real thin line because it's like, what's honesty and what's integrity? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get to choose for somebody else, but I do think there are some, you know, there's probably some lines of negotiation that we have to make in order to maintain some relationships. Like some people do not want the truth at all. Like some people they don't want to hear how they're received. They're too fragile, you know, and there's no great relationship that is built on someone who has fragile self-worth. It's just impossible because they can't receive feedback because their self-worth can't absorb the truth. They already believe they're not enough. So if someone tells them they did something wrong, they're going to believe I am something wrong because they haven't explored parts of themselves that they don't like. And so instead of being able to receive feedback about a behavior that's not okay, they double down on protecting what is already something that is so fragile. So, you know, and then you see shutting down, reacting, whatever the behavior is to protect what is yet undiscovered, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is something that really comes up so often is like we actually need to really acknowledge that. I mean, this is what I'm kind of doing with so many people. It's like that's protecting the shit out of you, and if you don't have any other mechanisms, like that's what got that's what kept you alive. So to you, let go of that.
Right.
If that's your only safety, I don't want you to let it go straight away. We need to replace some of that shit first, right?
No.
So, oh man, it is a tough coming one because we will, like you said, we're going to keep doubling down on it to make sure that we can protect this fragile little self.
Yeah, isn't that so true? Like we have to have compassion for where a dysfunctional behavior comes from because it is the best available behavior that we had to create and maintain social connections, even if it destroys connections. it is perceivably what maintained them. So self-abandonment, as you are very well aware, and I'm sure your listeners, is in order to maintain connection. I don't want to be too much. I don't want to ruffle feathers, because if I do, I'm not safe. Just like creating so much of a self that you're not available to relationship is also a survival strategy, so you don't lose yourself. Yeah. So like when you look at the way people relate, usually one person is more of a self where they forego relationship to keep themselves, and the other person foregoes self for relationship. We have different ways of strategizing or classifying those things, anxious, avoidant, you know, we have all these different terms, codependent, empathic, you know, we have all these different terms, highly sensitive person, anxiety, or the person who abandons self for relationship. There's way more terms for that one, because they are the people who tend to look up relationship information far more than an avoidant.
Well, they're anxious, you know. They want to know.
Exactly. How do I fix this?
Nope.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Is there a YouTube video on this? Tell me how to fix it now.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's like that love addiction, love avoidance sort of, theory of work, I guess. But it's like the love avoidance, avoidance in general, we get into relationship out of obligation. So when we kind of have the way out, we're not going to research how do we stay in it. We're going to go, let's get our needs met over there.
Right. Right, exactly. It's like, I don't need to research. I'm out. There's no coming back. I'm gone.
Yeah. Oh, God. So I, when you were saying before, we bring it all the way back to like getting to the point where you got to surrender and, you know, face this kind of truth and really be willing and ready to listen. For me, what brought me kind of to my knees is interesting. I was thinking about this a few weeks ago. I didn't know I was going to share this today, but here we go, is I couldn't get any matches on my dating profile. You know, I was just out of a relationship and I couldn't go and get my needs met. You know, I couldn't have connection. I couldn't have intimacy. I couldn't have sex, whatever, you know, not that I wanted any of that deep down, but when I couldn't find that, you know, and that's fucking definitely my addiction, you know, codependent through and through, but that, that didn't come. So I was like, how am I going to fill this void? And, you know, I think loneliness.
I've been there.
Yeah, but I'd love to hear what brought you to your knees, if it wasn't sort of on purpose, right? But I think that for me was like, I think I saw loneliness as this image of my ex-girlfriend. It's like she represented loneliness. So when I couldn't have her, I was like, I need something else. And then the acceptance of being like, no one's coming. You've tried and tried and tried, and I'm not going to go and sleep with sex workers or anything like that. I was like, I had some boundaries, but I was kind of like, well, what do I do? And I had to go, you're alone and you hate it and you've never really done this. So I kind of was forced into this surrender, which I accepted, which was beautiful, and it changed so much. But I'd already had so many lessons, but that was the real, like, you can keep fighting, or you can drop down and surrender and hand it all over.
Man, I think my coming to the awareness of being healthy and alone, it took me a long time. Like, I was definitely wanting relationships, seeking relationship early, I'd say from a healthy place generally, but you know, and I remember getting betrayed in a relationship in college, like a deep betrayal. It was really bad. And I had been someone who just wanted to love and be in relationship. I was, you know, codependent, anxious, you know, so I was like the relationship seeker, and I thought I was really good at them, because that's what most people who are anxious usually believe, is they're the ones who love all out.
You're a lover. You know,
and they're loving. Right. Exactly. The self-identity that, like, I just want to give, I got to find someone who can receive, because I keep finding these people who don't want my beautiful love. And so I was very much like kind of in that martyr state, you know. The betrayal was deep. It was my partner at the time had cheated on me, and the way I found out was really painful. But I left, because we don't teach people how to explore endings and how to explore pain, betrayal. I was ashamed, you know, embarrassed that my partner had cheated on me. So I didn't have anyone, and I didn't allow anyone. So I don't want to say there wasn't anyone available, but I didn't know how to be with that level of devastation and explore it. I changed how I oriented to relationship really differently. I went from chasing it to avoiding it to really rejecting the idea of marriage, rejecting the idea of relationship. I found that I then sought short-term relationships because I could control the depth of intimacy. Like I could be the one who gets to say, I'm not looking for anything. I was honest about that up front. But I really wanted connection. And so what would seemingly happen is the women would experience me treating them like a girlfriend, like a significant other. But as soon as they were like, I like you, what are we doing here? I know it's supposed to be casual. I would run for the hills because I had not processed that unconsciously after that betrayal. I had created the narrative that when I love people, they betray me. And so, or when I let people love me, they destroy me. And so because I hadn't explored that and I made that betrayal mean I wasn't lovable and that I didn't have choice or discernment, I avoided connection and love. I didn't let someone love me for years and years. And I was in relationships in that time. That's the crazy part. But I ran from every woman who could choose me, you know? So I really relate to what you're saying. Because when I finally got alone and was like, who am I? That's when I was like, oh my God, I haven't known who I am for since that day I was betrayed. Like I've been running this whole time. And that a bunch of grief hit me all at once. And you know, it's ironic because I got out of a relationship that I entered very intentionally after asking all these questions. And I tried to install like a Tinder, Bumble, you know, on my phone. And I tried to enter the casual encounter phase again just to cope with the level of pain I had. But the universe was like, you ain't getting none. So I was forced to sit with my shit. So I was laughing at what happened to you because the universe was like, not this time, bro. Like you're beyond that coping mechanism. And so, you know, I had to learn the value of aloneness. Oh my God. Some of the, that's when I read the book Love, Freedom, and Aloneness by Osho. It's one of the most powerful books I've ever read.
I haven't heard that one though. I would, I mean, this is added to the fucking truth. List.
That guy.
Love that. So, I mean, I'm glad you can relate. I didn't think that happened to anybody else. Good looking men not getting matches on dating profiles. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. But universe was like,
what is wrong with me?
It was not helping the shame message. That was for sure. It's like, I can't even, I was doing these ones. I was swiping right as fast as I can. The algorithm was like, I've been shadow banned. Like there's something that the app's broken.
And I emailed them. Shadow banned on a dating app.
I got defensive. And that was, you know, part of my destruction.
Did you actually email them? That's amazing. You have to do a whole podcast episode just on your own about the adventure of like how deep you went in denial to not sit with your aloneness.
Man, that's
a powerful story.
That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, what I did instead is one of the podcast guests that I've had on was fix your dating profile business. So I was like, use me.
Which is valuable.
Very.
Exactly.
Funny. But yeah. Look, yeah, I like that you can relate to that. That's really cool. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the time it's interesting because for me, I like you said, I was like, I was still dating. I was still trying to, you know, and I thought I was really healthy. You know, like I think in all my adaptive ways, I thought adaptive was healthy, but it just wasn't wounded. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. So it's like that reality for me was really just like, you know, I thought for so long that I was starting to love and be loved and do all these nice things. And I was like, yeah, I got this time. And yeah, I just kept learning and growing and I will forever. But I guess there was so many moments where it's like, you just haven't quite surrendered. And yeah, I mean, this is the thing. There's going to be moments and invitations that bring you to your knees and it's whether or not you take them and sit in it, which is really overcoming the fear, which I guess this is what we're kind of talking about is how do you feel the fear and do it anyway, sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, I think when we talk about like, what are all the things we can do to finally change? And you touched on connection and the power of connection. And I think community, because what it does is we start to resource from other people. Like we know that, hey, I have someone who's sitting beside me when I enact the boundary. I have someone who's supporting me that they're not going to let me date unavailable people anymore. I have someone. And so we have these resources of people who will tell us the truth. Most of us avoid people who tell us the truth when we don't want to confront it. So, but there's also this, this interesting shift. When I used to work in pharmaceutical sales, I used to sell this product that was in oncology. And so I remember doing a preceptorship with an oncologist, and I was sitting in this room and he was telling, you know, so it was for kidney cancer, and this man and his wife were in the patient room. And by the time you see a specialist, I mean, you've already been told, you know, this is, you know, this is what's going on with your cancer, blah, blah, blah. Well, he had not been fully informed. And so this was the first time that he was hearing that it was potentially and likely terminal.
Wow.
And I remember sitting there as he was being told that and just really absorbing the level of fear he had and his wife's reaction. She was emotional. And here I was, you know, stranger in a suit, just sitting there watching, like, what a thing to observe, what a private moment.
Yeah.
When I, you know, in hindsight, I just like, what a privilege, but also in some ways felt like a violation. But what was interesting is it had me thinking, like, there's a term in that world called survivorship. And it's that when people get a diagnosis, they all of a sudden start to thrive.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is it about that? Like, why do we have to wait? Because like all of us can get a diagnosis today, and that is that you are going to die, right? Like that's just true. The only reason we're not operating with the level of urgency that choosing love over fear requires is because we believe we've got time. And you know, that is that, I think that's from Rumi. The trouble is you believe you have time. And it's such a powerful quote because at any moment, anything can happen to us that makes that level of urgency become so present to us. So I think a lot about that. Like, how do I create that within myself artificially without having to do that? And it's not even artificially, but it's probably like just naturally sitting with the truth of mortality. And that just makes me consider, there's a line from Ram Dass where he says, he's talking about, I think Gandhi, whoever said, make your life, my life is my message. And he says,
yeah,
I hope I live with the integrity that the truths that live within me are the same as the truths that live outside of me. And when those two are not in alignment, I am sending a message of both love and fear. And when I heard that, I really sat with that. You know, there's a line when I was trying to step into writing about relationships and really stepping out of the familiar world I was in. I remember hearing Wayne Dyer say, don't die with the music still inside you. And I thought, oh my God, there's like so much music in me that no one has ever heard. Like there's so much more to me. Right. And you know, like think of like you created a podcast likely from the same intention. You know, I don't know if you were, but when I started a podcast, I was afraid to start it. I was afraid to start recording in video. I was afraid to start doing Instagram lives, Instagram stories. You know, all these edges of exposure. And
yeah,
you know, there just has to be a precipice. There has to be something that just makes us leap. And you know, the truth is that we want to know that it's going to work out. But, you know, I remember someone saying to me that like leap and the universe will catch you. And I was like, come on, like that's so esoteric, you know, like you can just smoke some more weed. And I can honestly say that's true now. And I think you don't get the net till you take the leap, not knowing the net's there. And mm-hmm. that for me now, even though I'm still always kind of living that leap and getting afraid and staying in familiar patterns,
yeah.
By the time I get to the place I leap, which hopefully is getting shorter in time, although this last leap has been a little long, I just hope that I keep learning that that's how the universe works, you know? Mm.
And before the podcast, we were talking about faith, right? I mean, if anything, that is just a beautiful message of faith. It's like, if I can trust in me and then trust in that, then I'm unstoppable. You know, I live with worth. I can create my own power. You know, I can be worthy from within. Like, that's incredible, man. I love that. You know, you make your own net, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know what? That's beautiful. Like the level of reassurance, like, you know, you got you. And I think in romantic relationships or relationships of all kinds, there has to be a knowing that in the possibility of friction and someone not agreeing with you or someone not choosing you, that you know you got you. At the end of the day, deeply embedded in yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, for healthy relationships to thrive, the answer to that question about other people has to be yes too. Like, if I really needed you, would you be there?
But yeah.
How often is the answer yes about another person, but not yes about ourselves?
Totally. And it's always that walk-in contradiction. It's constant. And, you know, my mind flips on it so much. It's like, you've got to love you before you can love someone else. It's bullshit, but it helps, you know. And, that's the tricky part of it all. It's like, how do I have me? Because if you leave, I want to know that you're not going to take all of me with you. I want to still be able to have me. You're the icing on top of my cake, but I'm using my own ingredients for my own cake, not you as one of the main ingredients.
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy or that metaphor, because it really is so much like, they're going to contribute to your life. They're going to contribute to your well-being. Right. You know, being in healthy relationships, regardless of they're romantic or not, is actually one of the greatest predictors of your health. So, the idea that you have to love you to love someone else, I think that the ability to receive love is like a chicken and an egg thing. It's like, if someone tells you they love you and they sincerely do, but you don't love yourself, you'll believe that you're a fraud. You know, you won't believe them. And so it actually, that type of love can be the invitation. Sometimes we lose that kind of love to realize its value. You know, we cheat on someone like that. We reject them. We betray them. We get reactive. We push them away. We sabotage it. And we might regret that, but the real regret is not actually turning and orienting towards love differently and learning the lesson from loss. Man, loss has so many lessons.
Yeah, especially loss of self, right? Because I think there's so many things that I was grieving, and I think it took me a while to figure out that I was grieving how much I lost of me when I would have a breakup. Like, I let so much of that be me, and that, you know, like the whole, like, I'm not whole unless I'm with you. Like, I'm not complete, or the one is sort of someone I've got to go find. Like, I didn't realize how much I lose me and how much grief there is around that. And that, yeah, I guess the next beautiful relationship, like the relationship I'm in now, it's like, that's the vehicle for me for kind of making that growth, seeing it happen. And like you said, you know, there's so many songs I haven't been able to sing. And now I'm like, preach it, you know, top of the mountain sort of stuff. And it feels good. It feels really good. So, yeah, I mean, we grow and thrive in relationships if they let them, if we let ourselves, and we kind of are willing. But, yeah, we got to get there.
We got to be willing to do it, you know, and that takes a level of vulnerability, courage, leaping. It's not different than anything, you know. It's like when someone says, I just don't believe in love anymore, I'm like, well, the reason you're avoiding it is not because of love. It's because of pain. It's because of suffering. It's because of the things we do to protect ourselves from hurt. You know, like, if I don't want to look at the poor choices I've made relationally, then I'm going to keep making them because I haven't garnered the wisdom from the thing I don't want to look at. And so mm-hmm. then we're like, as you said, we repeat what we don't repair. And it's like, yeah, you gotta be willing to look at the things, especially the things you're most ashamed of. Because ironically, that's where the greatest piles of wisdom actually reside.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the gift wrapped in shit, right? this, if we're willing to kind of go,
oh, it's so true.
This is messy. This is great. I mean, there's a quote on the back of my wall over here. It says, it's Brené Brown. It's staying vulnerable is a risk we have to take in order to experience connection. If we want to love again, we've got to be ready to get hurt again and have pain. Simple as that.
Right. There's no one without the other. Such an essential. It's the price of admission.
Right. You know, and I guess that's the buy-in that you have to be willing to sacrifice, because if you're not vulnerable, you're not going to get
right
anywhere further than you've already been, and you repeat the, you know, same old shit, you get the same old result.
Yeah, you're going to get what you give. Mm. Yeah. Agreed. Mm.
Whoa, I'm so pumped up. It's so good. What a nice kind of chat. Exactly how I thought it would go. Sometimes I'm like, I didn't know how this is going to go, but I knew we'd vibe in this way, and we could probably talk for literally hours. That's how I feel anyway.
When I come to Australia, we could talk for hours. That sounds good.
Yeah, bro, you can stay on my couch, right? I'm sure you'll probably want to say somewhere nicer, but Nikaku is super.
I think my wife and kid will probably come. But if I come solo, I'm in.
Yeah, sweet ass. Well, yeah, I mean, I'd love to host you guys, all of you. That'd be amazing. Yeah, dude, I think people would love to come and see more of you down here. And I would definitely really value being meeting you in person for sure. I think that would be incredible. I really want to come over to the US and do some big conferences and stuff like that. So just got to make my way over. We'll find a way to meet in person.
Oh, there's a big one in March. There's a big one in March called the Psych Networker. You got to go to that one. That one's so
good. Yeah, that is big. That's a big boy. And there's already a few on the list, I think, some big names. Which
it's
is
such a good conference.
Yeah, I need to come to that. It's all billable, baby. So that'll get me over there.
Yeah, it is like a nerd fest. I love it. It's like totally nerd out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the best at retaining information because I get so excited. I'm like, yeah, learning. And then, it just goes one in out the other. And that's definitely the old ADHD brain. But yeah, man, I mean, so much to learn. And you're just a walking encyclopedia, Mark. Like, you just know. For relationships, you know, you can quote so many different books, and I mean, always in admiration around how much knowledge you keep in that big brain of yours. It's really makes
thanks, makes man.
The time even more special. So, look, for those that kind of aren't following markets or know what's kind of going on for you, where can they find you, and what's kind of next, or what's on the cards for you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Create the Love on Instagram, also createthelove.com. I have courses, like my Dating 101 course is really about taking dating and turning it into a transformational, empowering, healing process. And then I have one on breakups that's about taking a breakup and making it the best thing that's ever happened to you. And one called Rediscover Your Wholeness. That's really the process you and I are talking about today. Mm-hmm. They can find all that at createthelove.com. The next mission, oh man. Well, I'm about to amalgamate Create the Love and It's Mark Groves. It's Mark Groves is my account more spoken about the cultural happenings of what's happening in the world today. And I have a podcast called The Mark Groves Podcast. And where I've been doing that the whole time there. So I've really felt like a little split in how I want to express and who I want to be. So those two are coming together soon. So that's really exciting. Yeah.
That is exciting.
It feels like a coming back to center for me. Yeah, it feels good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love that. I mean, you got to practice what you preach, man. Come into alignment, right? So I think that'd be a cool amalgamation or whatever that word is that you said. It's a nice one. Coming up. But yeah, that's like this cool sort of thing, because it's all of you, right? And that's the whole point. Your authenticity is what makes you, dude.
Yeah, the totality. And if I like stay split, I stay rejecting that it's all together. It's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a necessary split, like all splits are, all trauma splits are necessary in order to survive. So this one is coming back and embracing and seeing what we can do united, you know, excited to see what that means.
Well, I mean, it all comes back to the same collective, same community, same connection. And, you know, people are going to not like it, or they're going to like it. It's like, well, this is my boat. Enjoy it. Plenty of boats, you know.
Exactly. You want a boat that makes you feel good all the time? Not this boat.
Yeah. Conflict is, you know, recovery. Conflict is progress. I love it. So we always need a little bit of that. All right.
Well, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for trusting me with your audience. Thanks for everything. Thanks for your support. You've been incredible, and I love what you're doing, and really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, I loved it, man. I loved it too, and it's such an honor to have you, and I can't wait till it all comes out. We can share it with the world, so appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Do you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals? Go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.